And now to the DNR's presence on TikTok. The Department of Natural Resources is getting creative with this video sharing app. So users make videos that are up to a minute long. And over the past year, the DNR has posted about 150, like this watery one with a caption that reads, "Lake sturgeon have started spawning along the shoreline of the Wolf River." Hashtag sturgeon, fish facts, spring vibes. All good? Are we good? Do you follow the DNR on TikTok? Conversation is here, 800-642-1234. Katie Grant is Digital Communications Section Chief for the Wisconsin DNR. Katie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, give us a straight story. Why does the DNR have a TikTok account?
Yeah, so we started seeing TikTok really pop up, in January, February of last year a little bit. And we saw the cool things that things like the Washington Post and even the city of Minneapolis were doing around explaining Trump's first impeachment trial and COVID and taking those really high-level concepts and breaking them down into short little snippets that were easy for people to understand. And we thought, hey, isn't that a great way for us to, you know, start educating a new audience on what it is that we do here at the DNR about Wisconsin's outdoors and our natural resources? So we really just kind of came up with the idea as a way to reach new people that we weren't reaching in other ways.
I wonder, you know, the account has been active since last April. Did the pandemic have a role in creating the TikTok?
Not really, though. Okay. It was kind of a happy accident. We had had plans to do a whole big Earth Day birthday as kind of our launch to being on there. And with the pandemic, you know, we kind of had to step back and come up with a new game plan. But it did work in our favor, just in that it gave us the time to experiment a lot more than I think we otherwise would have been able to.
So what kinds of messages are you trying to put out there on TikTok?
Yeah, you know, a lot of it is just awareness of what it is that we do at the DNR. You know, everything from fishing season opening this weekend to the fact that Wisconsin has a wildfire season. We do some, you know, just general fun stuff. For example, we had a really great one this winter that we affectionately call Snowball Steve that was just kind of like, hey, get outdoors, enjoy the snow, in a way that was a little bit more fun than just the government is telling you to get outside, right? So we've been having a lot of fun with it. Basically, anything we're talking about with regard to, you know, our news releases, our other social media, we're trying to talk about those same things on our TikTok account.
Yeah, so I can imagine the meetings are like, okay, the press release is done. Now, what about TikTok? I mean, like, how do you incorporate it?
Yeah, some of it definitely is that. You know, I'm not the one-man show. I am not DNR TikTok guy. Our videographer, Dan Robinson, is affectionately known as DNR TikTok guy. And he, myself, a couple people on our comms team, we sit down every week and just kind of brainstorm, you know, what messages are coming up? Is fishing season this weekend? Do we have Clean Air Month coming up? What holidays are being celebrated this month or this week? So we kind of look at that, but then we also look at it from what's trending? Mm. What are people having fun with on TikTok? And how can we adapt that to kind of what it is that we need to be doing?
So let's go back to your TikTok guy for a moment. He's fun, Dan Robinson. I mean, some of these videos of him and his expressions are just hilarious. Did he assume that role willingly?
kind of accidentally as well there. It was really, you know, we needed someone to do the work, right? And I was doing some of it from the start. He was doing some of it. And he just kind of started throwing himself into it. And it really stuck. It's been a lot of fun. He is hilarious. I personally rewatch our TikToks like on my free time all the time, just for a good laugh. My boyfriend will lay on the couch and watch him at night, just chuckling to himself. But yeah, he threw himself into it, and it's been good fun all around. We really are excited for, you know, the pandemic to be over, for us to be able to get out in the field more from the comms side of things, and also to get more of our staff involved in it so that we can show more of those facets of what it is that we do here. And also, you know, just more diversity. It's really important for us to show that the outdoors are open for everyone. And this is a really great tool to show that.
Yeah. Katie Grant is with us, Digital Communications Section Chief at the DNR. And she's telling us about their TikTok vibe. The agency is flexing its creative muscle on the video sharing app. What more would you like to see the DNR talk about on TikTok? Do you use TikTok to promote your business or your interests? What other Wisconsin TikTok accounts do you follow and why? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead with Katie Grant here on the Ideas Network. Now, who says the DNR is not a hip, cool agency? I don't even know the right words now for hip and cool. Lee Rayburn, do you know the right words for it? He's shaking his head. Lee Rayburn knows the right words for hip and cool. He's just not going to let me drag him into this because Gen Xers have to keep up now. All right, I digress, but the DNR has been posting these irresistible TikTok videos. Here's one that gives a tip on putting out a campfire.
Drown, stir, drown. Feel, drown, stir, drown, feel, drown, stir, drown, feel.
Be fire smart.
Be fire smart. Hashtag fire safety, wildfire season, learn on TikTok. Do you learn things through DNR TikTok videos? Which one is your favorite? Conversation is here, 800-642-1234. And the DNR's Digital Communications Section Chief, Katie Grant, stays with us. You know, Katie, wildfire season is so serious. And when I saw this TikTok video, I just laughed out loud.
It's a good one for sure. A bop, as the kids call it, I think. yeah, it's a fun one. Dan, DNR TikTok guy, definitely ran with that. That's him singing it.
Really?
Fully his idea. Yeah, that's him singing it completely.
Oh my gosh, that's so great. And you know, it is very helpful as well, because I didn't know those three, you know, those three things. And so you do learn a little bit along the way. How do you approach TikTok differently compared to, say, DNR's other social media like Instagram?
Yeah, so we recognize, you know, obviously that social media is where a lot of our people are, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who aren't on social media, but it is the place where we need to be to educate the public on what's going on. And so we approach all of our social media very much the same way. But when it comes to TikTok, we want to make sure that we're having fun with it. I like to call it edutainment, because it just keeps it more interesting. And it, you know, it could be really stuffy for us to Big Brother government say, you know, don't start wildfires. But when you add a little bit of fun to it, it makes it stick, much like that video does.
What do you think are the challenges of making the DNR appeal to younger audiences like Gen Z, like Gen Alpha, born after 2010?
You know, I think part of it is just starting off with the fact that they need to know who we are and what it is that we do. And so that's really where that awareness comes in and why we found TikTok to be such a great outlet for it. We also are really wanting to make sure that no matter your race, sex, creed, ability, whether you are a Packer fan or a Viking fan, whoever you are, the outdoors is open for everyone. And there's not a much better place than TikTok showing some of these awesome outdoor places and the ways that you can recreate in them and teaching about those things than TikTok.
What advice would you give to other agencies, other businesses, other organizations that are interested in trying out this type of social outreach?
Yeah, that's a great question. Have fun with it, but don't try to be funny, right? Anytime we try
to
be
too
funny. Right, exactly. When you try to be funny on TikTok, it it falls flat so often. It very much comes off as, hello, fellow youth, right? So we have fun with it. And we definitely, you know, try to balance that entertainment with the fun. And we, you know, I like to think that we're funny, but we don't try too hard to be funny. So definitely that balance is really important.
Have you been surprised at all by the reaction? What has been the response?
Yeah, it has been fantastic. Back during deer season, we did what we called the Wisconsin I Love You. It was TikTok guy saying, watch for deer, with some really touching music to go with it. And that the response to that one was just craziness. It trended very quickly. It was showing up on people's For You pages. It was really fun to see. And people get really excited just by, you know, say, commenting and saying, will the DNR respond? And all we have to do is say hi, and people love it. So if you are on TikTok, come say hi to us. We will absolutely say hi back. And it's been really fun to see the support that we've gotten from leadership. DNR leadership has been totally on board, really supportive. And in general, they really embrace that we are on social media because they understand, you know, that expectation is there that people are on social media and that it is one of the best ways for us to build awareness and support of, you know, what the DNR is doing and really reinforcing that the outdoors are open for everyone.
Katie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Katie Grant is Digital Communications Section Chief for the Wisconsin DNR. Ahead this hour, the conviction of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin resulted in a complex mix of emotions, and the trauma, it continues for communities of color. We check in with a Wisconsin consultant who's worked with police departments and trained officers on bias and diversity. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. Now, the process of restoring and rebuilding trust in communities of color. The murder conviction came swiftly and decisively in the Derek Chauvin case. But as we've learned, murder convictions of officers for fatal police shootings are incredibly rare. And the trauma, it continues for BIPOC communities. What do you think this case will mean for the future of policing? What do you hope changes? Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. Eddie Moore Jr. is a Wisconsin-based author, speaker, and consultant on the topics of diversity and cultural competence. He's worked with police departments and trained officers on bias and diversity. Eddie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Kate Archer-Kent. Good to be here. Good to hear you again.
Good morning. What emotions can you share with us have you been experiencing and working through in the week since Derek Chauvin was found guilty of murdering George Floyd?
Yeah, I don't want to say celebration, but I do feel a sense of joy for the family because I think just being able to know that there'll be some consequences associated with the death of a family member, I just have to feel that there was some joy there, and I shared some of that. But also, I think some frustration, some anger, some still some rage for me inside, because almost simultaneously as that verdict is being read, another death is happening in the same way. And so that rage, that emotion is running through me as well. And then lastly, just as a Black man, I mean, I don't want to believe that. I mean, when I leave my house, really, is it possible that I'll never come back? Just going to the store, just, you know, traveling to a Target or a Home Depot or whatever I may be doing in my day-to-day life, is it still possible? Just day-to-day engagement in life could end in death for me as a Black man, me as a father of a Black son. So I don't want to say I feel fear, but there is some worry in my spirit that bothers me as well. Kate, so that's all the stuff I'm jumbling up inside when I, you know, think about, you know, the time we're in, particularly in reference to the verdict.
So many conflicting emotions there, the frustration, the anger, the rage, but also some uplifting emotion for the family. And I'm wondering, you know, there are conversations about policy around legislation and around police training and how to stop these fatal encounters. When we focus on the policy, what are we leaving out?
You know, I think the thing I feel is missing is just some visible engagement of police, of citizens, of community in a multicultural way. I think any difficult challenge, any difficult situation, I think the research is showing that when we have a diverse group of people involved in solving that issue, that we're more likely to get to a answer, and it's more likely to be a more impactful answer, a solution. And I feel like that's missing, at least for me visually. I'm not seeing that. I know there's sometimes individual police leaders speaking out, talking about doing some things. Of course, people in the community. But I feel like there's a real absence of the visible presence of those folks all together grappling, sitting in a room saying, over this 6 months' time or 3 months' time, months' time, we're going to get to an answer. And it feels like there's still some powerful stuff happening in silos, but I feel like we really need a collective, collaborative, intersectional approach, so to speak, that is visible for our kids, for our communities, as we grapple with this difficult issue.
So it sounds like a diverse coalition and people really working shoulder to shoulder and working on, you know, getting this done together.
I think that's something I feel is, at least visibly, I'm not seeing. I'm not saying it may not be happening in some places, that I may be missing it, but I feel nationally, it feels like we hear from the police, we hear from the community. But where is that kind of unity approach?
We're talking with Eddie Moore Jr. He's an author. He founded the Privilege Institute. He works on the root causes of structural racism every day and consults on strategies for equity. You can join in 800-642-1234. Bill is joining us in Watertown. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'm glad that this is a topic that we can all talk about, and I think that everybody wants to see unity. I think one of the issues that, you know, from the white community into the African-American community is that oftentimes we see so many of these people that have unfortunately suffered this way are typically, or we've seen a lot of sort of career criminals or criminals in the area, and the white community, I think, just at large, views that as being protection for our community, that we're trying to protect that. How do we get the balance between that, where we're not elevating, say, a criminal or a career criminal above the people that are supposed to protect the communities from the career criminals?
Eddie, your insights.
Yeah, thank you for that, Bill. You know, I think what I would ask for folks as they're looking at these situations, these scenarios, in the case of as far back as Trayvon Martin to, I mean, most recently, George Floyd. Again, I'm not sure what people mean by career criminal, you know, mastermind criminal or whatever that may be. But what I would say, Bill, no one should die for a counterfeit $20 bill. That's what's bothering some for me. No matter how many times he's been engaged with the police, the fact that he's dead for an offense of counterfeit $20 bill, where, I mean, some could argue other populations of people who've committed like mass, I mean, major crimes, major deaths, I mean, somehow make it into the police office, to the police car, to the police station unharmed, unscathed. I think that's where people, myself, is feeling bothered. It feels like not that I don't want the police involved, not that we don't want police policing the community and keeping us safe. I'm not saying that, but I think what I'm looking at, what I'm feeling is happening, is whether it's a 10th time offense or a 150th time offense, whatever, I don't think someone, you know, involved in the kind of situation that George Floyd was in with a counterfeit bill should be dead. We've seen other folks who are, again, as I said, involved in other kinds of crimes that get to the station unharmed.
I'm wondering, you recently held an event where you and a police officer shared your experiences. What do you believe the value of that kind of dialogue was, and what happened?
Yeah, well, the value of that dialogue was what I mentioned earlier, Kate, is at least some visible engagement of a Black man and a policeman telling their story. Me being able to say to Officer Kevin, here's how I'm feeling as a Black man when I think about the police. Here's what I've been taught about that. And him being able to counter that, us having a real relationship, a real conversation about some real emotions, some real experiences. And even in some cases where we agree, in some cases where we disagree, what's most important is our relationship. And being able to visibly have that on display, I think that was what was most powerful. And for me, I think it helped to, you know, I'm not saying solve some of my bias in reference to the police. I still have it. I'm going to admit to that. And I'm working on that. But it helps when I have a real life police officer. I'm not just saying policeman. I'm saying Officer Kevin. I know him. We had a conversation. We have a relationship. And for me, I think that's what helped me. And I hope what helped the listening, viewing audience was some visible, again, ways that they can see these engagements happening.
Tony is joining us from Egg Harbor with thoughts. Tony, hi.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to have a short conversation regarding what I call culturalism, that people who may not see themselves as racist, but they're isolationists because they're uncomfortable in cultures dissimilar from themselves. So if a person's not comfortable in the culture of the Asian community, and then they isolate themselves into a culture that they grew up in, and they would flat out say they are not racist, but they're isolationists because they don't want to venture out past their culture. And I think we need to have a realistic conversation about isolationism.
And Tony, I want to jump in here because we are short on time. What are the consequences of, you know, taking that isolationism and following that path? Eddie, are you there?
I mean, again, I think, Tony, listen, if you want to be an isolationist, that's fine. I mean, I think, hey, you should have the freedom to do that. If you don't want to hang out with, be around, talk with, interact with Black folks, I mean, I'm not saying, hey, you're a racist. If you want to name that isolationist, that's cool. But if you're the police, right, and I'm part of the citizenry, you can't, in my opinion, have an isolation approach. Because you're going to really be building some inexperience, some walls, some lack of existence and proximity to me and my cultural understanding and interaction. And therefore, it could impact the way you engage me. So I think for certain professions, that isolation is dangerous. Mm. Teachers, folks interacting with the general public, their job is to serve the general public. But for individual citizens, if that's something you choose, this is America. Hey, isolate. More power to you. I don't think it's the reality of the world we're going to be living in, but we can agree to disagree on that. But I'm not going to name you racist because you decide to live in segregation or isolation. But I am saying, as a police officer, as a public servant, that shouldn't be an option.
Eddie, thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime, Kate. Anytime.
Eddie Moore Jr. is an author, speaker, and consultant. He founded the Privilege Institute, works on strategies for equity. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.